Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and we are in for a treat because it is a preseason tradition that we are about to take a look at once again, because the creator of the Conn's Type system is here to take a look at all of the character types that we are going to see returning to Survivor in Survivor Winners at War. Here she is. Welcome back, the great Angie Conn's. Angie, how are you?
Woo! I'm doing great, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Yes, very excited to get into everything here today, Angie. A lot of people say I can't do my draft. I can't watch the season until I hear from Angie and what her system has to say about the Winners at War.
I think that's a bit of a stretch when it comes to the returnee seasons, but I will absolutely take it where I can get it.
Okay, well, we'll get into all that here today and hear 20 predictions based on how the returning player character types have done when they have come back to Survivor. But Angie, what's going on with you? What's any updates?
Everything just good? The regular slog, just work and mothering and work and mothering and yeah, that kind of thing. So it's just like, just getting through it, just waiting till the kids are grown up and my real life can begin.
Okay. All right. How about you watch The Circle?
I didn't.
Okay.
But that's something that that Toby and I are definitely, we have on our list that we need to binge. I did a bad thing. I made him start watching Blacklist.
Blacklist?
Yeah, he never watched it. And I love James Spader. I think so. But the point is, he hadn't even watched one episode. So we had to start right at the beginning. And he's doing this thing. He's such a trooper. He's like, let's just get through it. So mm-hmm. It's like, even when like Vikings is on, it's like, no, let's just finish it. So we've been doing this for weeks.
Yeah.
So if I start like acting like James Spader, that's why. So no, we're definitely watching The Circle soon. And, super excited for Australian All-Stars. So
we're
definitely started that yesterday.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's do a little cross promotion. I will be with Shannon Gus later on this week to recap week one of Australian Survivor on our Rehab Ups feed. So be on the lookout for that.
I got to say, like, those Australians have it down. It is top tier.
Yeah. You know, that not to get into too many other things, but Angie, I got to be interviewed by Dalton Ross today. We're talking about the winner snubs, and you know, Mike Bloom and I did the Winners at Peace Brant Steele simulation. should they have gone Australian Survivor and gone three tribes of eight, 24 players for the Winners at War?
Yeah. I think if you're going to do it, you have to be inclusive. Like it just seems so arbitrary and, a little bit, gross in some areas, you know, like to not have Vesepia there, I think is really notable,
mm-hmm.
You know, like it's not the place of casting to determine who's worth watching and who isn't, you know, either you're having a winter season or you're not.
Yeah. Because basically, I mean, not to pile on the edge of extinction some more, but I might for a second. I mean, if you had the edge of extinction, it's basically a 22 person season, no?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, because there's going to be two times you're going to bring people back. Like, you have 20 players, and then you're going to bring two people back into the game. You basically are already at 22 people.
You might as well just pile it on. I mean, if there's one thing Australian Survivor has shown us, is that you can have tons of players and it's still amazing. It's mm-hmm. still doable.
Yeah.
You know, you just elongate the game, you add more food rewards, and you can, like, there's yeah. no, like, it doesn't have to fit into
they
this box.
Done it.
They're already completely stretching yeah. the structure of the game with the whole Edge of Extinction. So you're mm-hmm. right. Why not just take it a little bit
further.
You could
have one time pre-merge. Okay, both tribes are going to tribal council tonight. They mm-hmm. did that in Heroes versus Villains. It was a great episode of the show. And you could have one time at the merge and have two tribal councils in an episode. They could have done it. It would have been no problem.
The problem is they're not asking us before they design these games, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, if they do, then we'll point them back to this podcast for what should they?
Reference.
Yes, for the first boot season that they could have 24 first boots. Okay. All right, Angie. Give us a little bit of context. You know, there's always new people listening to the podcast. This is going to be somebody's first time listening to you talk about your system. What is the const type system?
Okay, so the const types is a theory whereby I have gone through every player of every season of Survivor and tried to categorize them into one of 26 character types. So I arrange them by, you know, gender, by demographic, by personality traits, by job, by vocations, this kind of thing. The theory being that there are patterns and there are threads that are maintained from season to season to season in order to make a very similar kind of makeup of different character types on every single season.
Yeah.
And then once that's done, you can kind of predict how they're going to do, how they're going to play, what personality traits are going to emerge, because there's a certain amount of consistency from season to season.
Yeah. If we could sort of assign a label to each type of person who's there and say, okay, the people that have this label traditionally go far, the people that have this label traditionally are out early. And so it gives us a little bit of a sense of how somebody who fits in this category might end up faring. Now, here's the complicated part. The All-Star seasons are different than the regular seasons, and we have less data to lean on, Angie.
Yeah, no, I mean, and part of what's fun about the character type system is that it can kind of predict the personalities of the players and how they'll behave before we've ever really even met them.
Yes.
But with the returnee seasons, we already know the answers to a lot of those questions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when it becomes more of a, you know, it becomes more of a statistical discussion about how well the types do when they come back. But as you said, the data sets for this are very, very small. But the good news is, in this case in particular, the players that are most influential in setting the bar for how these returnee character types will behave are literally the players that are playing this season.
I was going to say that you can come up with a new type of, I call this type the Boston Rob, so that in four times out, the Boston Rob actually ends up playing the game like this. I call this is the Tyson. This is the Sandra.
It's practically what we're doing today. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we are looking to past results to predict the future, which we'll see. We'll see how it goes. And again, this is for fun. This is for fun, everybody.
And I had many, many months to ponder how in the world I was going to modify my system to handle the all winter season. And having many long debates with myself, I did come to the conclusion that the only thing I could do was absolutely nothing, meaning I'm not changing the player's character types from their original type, even if that player is completely different now. So even if they're 20 years older, even if they've had a zillion kids, even if they are now doctors or lawyers, and it's because I have to be consistent, I realized, or it's not actually going to predict anything. Like, at which point in their Survivor careers are they supposed to change? The second time they come back, but not the first time. You know what I mean? Like, I'll get a more, like, will I get a more accurate read on Parvati if I suddenly make her a mommy dearest and compare her to a bunch of first time players who were nothing like her?
Mm-hmm.
And if I just compare her to herself.
Yeah.
Right. So the assumptions I'm making with these returnee character types is that I'm assuming that there is a maturation process for each one of them.
Yeah.
And that it's like the Uber version of each one of these, and that it's tracking how each type adapts and learns as they come back.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
So, like, cause I can, like, I'm already imagining all the arguments coming from the fan base saying, like, no, but Tyson's definitely more like a Heisenberg now than a surfer dude. But the fact is, like, that game learning that he has, that wisdom, that deceptive quality, they all have that. They're all like the Heisenberg version. They're all like, you know what I mean? Like, they've all adapted in their own way.
And this is what we say to those people: make your own system. Okay. And then you can tell Angie Kontz how it goes in your system.
Right.
And then that's that. Okay. But this is Angie's podcast today, and we're listening to her talk about her system. All right.
Now, not your system.
Yes. Yes.
Now, system.
Our system. And Angie, let me give you some more good news because
excellent.
That I've retired from talking about season 39. So we're not even going to revisit the results of the system for season 39.
That's amazing. I took zero notes. I have a note saying, if Rob brings this up, change.
Yeah, we're going to, I'm telling you, we're not even going to explore it. So you catch a break today. All right.
That's
so
awesome.
Angie.
I did want to say, wait, before we launch into it, I did want to identify one thing that I did differently.
Yes.
To be able to, analyze this season is I completely isolated all the returnee stats from the new player stats. Mm-hmm. So we've done that before, but what I hadn't done before was something that you've been consistently asking me to do for the new player seasons,
yes.
Which is remove all the returnee player data from the new player data and look at them as two separate systems completely.
Mm-hmm.
So I did pull them out to compare them this time. And it's kind of neat because you can see when it completely changes the outcome and when it barely makes a difference. So there are some character types that have remarkably, radically different outcomes depending on whether it's a new player season or an older player season.
Okay.
Or a returnee player season.
Okay.
And there's one more thing that I noticed, because this is not going to come up if I don't say it now. When I detangled those stats from each other, the gender bias shrunk significantly for returnee seasons, which I thought was fascinating.
Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah. So I have a bunch of hot takes about that I don't know if you want to get into or not get into.
Well, I don't think you can tease a hot take and not deliver on it now.
Okay. All right. Well, there are 11 seasons that featured returnee players, of which eight were won by returnees. So by that, I mean like the Philippines wasn't won by a returnee, but it's still sort of a returnee season. So out of those eight seasons, the male to female ratio of wins is split 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
If you compare this to the new player only seasons, 20 times a man has won and only 15 times a woman has.
Mm-hmm.
So what's neat about this is that it's far more likely as well that within like the top five placement rankings for returnee seasons, the majority of those character types are female, which is pretty cool.
Do you have any hypotheses as to why that would be the difference of why that women are doing better on returnee seasons than on first time out seasons?
I think there's a number of reasons. I think there are the all-star women are more assertive.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're more strategic. I think they're better at eliminating male threats. They're less likely to kind of bow down to male leadership. They'll be working behind the scenes to kind of topple over that kind of structure. So yeah, I mean, my first hot take is that it's far more likely that a woman wins this season than a man.
Okay, well, let's get into it. Let's start to see how it will play out, what the system is going to tell us. But we have to start with who the system is out on. First boot. And I'm really excited to get into this because I feel like that a lot of us in terms of like podcasting and predictions on the season, I feel like that there's not a ton of variance in how people think players are going to do. I feel like that almost everybody thinks certain players are going to do good. Almost everybody thinks certain players are going to do bad. And we've sort of like a lot of us just are arriving at the same conclusion. So I feel like that I'm excited that the system could inject some randomness into how most of us are feeling about certain players.
Well, I am going to need you to enlighten me as we go.
Okay. Because
I have purposely not listened to anybody else's opinions because I like
you only come to me.
Well, I can be, you know, I don't want to second guess, you know, my take on something. I don't want to be influenced by anything. I want this to happen for me in a vacuum.
Okay, real so, quick. Like, everybody thinks Ben is going to win. People love the Edge of Extinction.
They love the Edge of Extinction.
I'm just filling you in on everybody what's been going on.
Are you screwing with me right now, though? I think you're screwing with me. I'm weak-minded, but I'm not that weak-minded.
Okay. All right. Yeah, let's get in. I want to hear the first person. Who does the system out on?
The system's out on Yule.
Yule.
Yule's our first boot.
Okay.
So Yule is a seduce and destroy.
Okay.
And I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over what the character types all are and past players, other than the past
rent
returnee
Magnolia
players.
On Apple iTunes. Okay.
Yeah.
Movie
and this
store.
Is one of the character types, by the way, that does pretty much the same, whether it's a new player season or a returnee one. But here's the thing. The only other seduce and destroy that has played in a returnee season is the fan favorite and social mastermind, Jeff Varner.
Mm-hmm.
So not particularly reflective of what Yule's capabilities are.
No.
Right?
Okay. So I could see a world where Yule could be the first person out. So I don't disagree with the system on this one. I don't think that Yule will be the first person out, but he's just somebody who does not have a ton of connections. Also, somebody who I think that the book on him is going to be Yule is incredibly intelligent and that he is somebody to really watch out for. I think that people are going to be scared of him. So I could see a first boot for Yule.
Yeah. I mean, he was he's a very cerebral player and that does freak people out. I also think that there's a certain caliber of winner that's coming back that may not be, what I'm classifying as a power winner. And they may not be one of the more, we'll get them later winners, but they're right down the middle. And that in a way is a more dangerous place to be because I'm imagining that in the early vote out days, you just kind of want to go with the flow. Like if you come out, right out of the gate saying, we need to get rid of Sarah or we need to get rid of Tyson or we need to get rid of Rob, you're kind of putting a target on yourself by being so vocal and so aggressive. And you're kind of saying, hey, I'm out here to really take people out. But if someone like Yule just comes up organically, he's of enough of a threat that it doesn't feel like a waste, but not so much of a threat that you're putting a light on, you're shining a light on yourself to say, yeah, I could do
that. Right. You're not cowering that Yule might find out you said his name. Like if Yule finds out you said his name, he might have like a very reasonable conversation with you.
Yes.
To get to
and
the bottom
people
of the
aren't like, oh, wow, that guy came to play. He wants to get out Yule first. They're not going to be, it's not going to draw too much negative attention, I feel.
So I feel like that I don't believe many people have Yule as a consensus first boot, but I think that overall you have agreement with the chalk pick that I think Yule and people are thinking could be out before the merge.
Yeah. No, I think so for sure.
Okay. All right. After Yule, who
number
else?
Number 19. Our Lady Gaga, Michelle.
Michelle
Fitzgerald. Yeah. So this is another one that's very similar to the new player ranking. And Kimmy and Sugar are the only other Lady Gagas who have come back to play. Sugar was first boot, but Kimmy made it all the way to 6. Mm-hmm. So I do think Michelle will be more like Kimmy than like Sugar.
Yeah.
I feel like she'll feel like she has a lot to prove. But I think also she's one of these people that are not going to be on anyone's radar and she'll be able to dodge and weave and get pretty deeply into the game, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to her credit, if Michelle showed us anything in her season is that she knows how to make more aggressive players feel like she's a pawn for them while also being very aware of her place in the game.
Yeah.
So she's basically the Baby Yoda of this season. She's adorable and underestimated, and she can use the Force, but no one believes her, right?
Yeah. So I don't know if I agree with most of this Michelle here in 19th place. So starting with Michelle as the Lady Gaga, as far as I understand, the Lady Gaga is somebody who is sort of a little more offbeat in terms of your character types, correct? And I don't see that as Michelle. I feel like that Michelle fits in almost any group you put her in.
She is a very social version of the Lady Gaga, and I think that's why she was so successful her first time out. But it's the Lady Gaga is often kind of like the tree hugger. Like, she was the one that was talking about how much into Harry Potter she was. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, she was not like, it's when people are not on that kind of carved mainstream line of this is the school I'm going to get this corporate job that I want, and I'm going to be very A-type successful at XYZ. Like, do we even know what she really does for a living?
I think she, you know,
she just wins Survivor. It's her job.
I feel like this. She work in a restaurant. I'm not sure.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's just, it's really more like it is that kind of no collar. Mm-hmm. Classification. That's the Survivor lingo for what I classify as the Lady Gaga, and the Pony Boy is kind of the male equivalent of that. Someone who isn't mm-hmm. quite doing things the way society says. First, you do this, and then you do that, and then you get the white picket fence and the car and all that stuff.
Okay,
it sounds like a bunch of malarkey to me.
Okay, Michelle. All right, Michelle didn't like that.
Yeah.
Also, that the Michelle has the second boot of the season. I feel like you do not have agreement with the consensus chalk picks for the season. I feel like that most people feel like that Michelle is going to be around for a while.
I absolutely feel like Michelle's going to be around for a while as well. I kind of went through the cast and somewhat subjectively labeled them, put them into two categories of what I'm calling a power winner and what I'm calling a modest winner. I didn't want to mm-hmm. call them a soft winner or, you know, mm-hmm. understated or something, but someone that is not hands down, obviously a power threat.
Okay.
You know, is what I'm saying. Or at least that will be the perception as they're coming into the game. So I'm going to go ahead and assume that the seven players that I've classified as power winners are likely not going to win.
Okay.
So then out of those other ones, I'm eliminating most of the guys in terms of thinking, like, who do I honestly think is going to win? And, you know, there's a handful of, I think, of seven women left over once you do that. And Michelle's one of them. So it's like, I think she's got a very good chance.
Okay. All right. The third player out of the season, Angie, who does your system think it could be?
Sarah Lucina.
Okay. And what is Sarah's character type?
Sarah is Meredith Grey.
Meredith Grey. And, okay.
Yeah. And there have been five Meredith Greys to play in returnee seasons. So that's Eliza, Candace, Francesca, Monica Padilla, and Sarah herself. So of the five, only two have made the merge.
Mm-hmm.
So Sarah already won a returnee season. So she's already used up her element of surprise.
Mm-hmm.
From an underrated player card. And I do think that is a critical, necessary game requirement to win a returnee season. You have to come in thinking that, you know, you kind of have to have biffed your first season in a way to be able to come in and people just not be worried about you. No one is like thinking, man, if we let them get post-merge, they're going to win the whole thing. You have to do that whole kind of sneak attack. They don't even mm-hmm. know what I've got going on, you know. But Sarah is a perfect example of someone that went from what was perceived to be a mediocre player to someone who was listed. I think she was the most targeted player on those Dalton Ross's first vote cards. I mean, I only saw like 13 of them. I don't know if he did it for everybody, but it's like shocking how many of them thought Sarah was a problem. And maybe that's recency bias, but that's not good. I think she's going to be an easy early boot because I think, you know how when Ciri was playing Heroes Villain, you know that, and Parvati felt this too, when you show up and just no one wants to work with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be Sarah. She's not going to have anyone who wants to work with her. And total consensus from everyone that, yeah, we need to get rid of Sarah.
Yeah.
So I think she could even be first boot.
Okay. Yeah. So you do have agreement on Sarah mm-hmm. Lucina being somebody who's targeted early. I think a lot of people have her going out. I think that a lot of it has to do with, I think that she had a high threat level coming in. People remember her mm-hmm. game from Game Changers and then a plethora of first votes on the card to Dalton Ross, I think, have only accelerated those theories about Sarah Lucina being an early boot. So, okay. So I feel like that the system, two out of three so far.
Mm-hmm. So next in line, we have our Chelsea Handler, Sophie Clark.
Okay.
So this is one of the ones where if she were being a brand new player playing for the first time, she would make the merge. But the Chelsea Handlers don't do particularly well. So they are the most common returnee female character type.
Mm-hmm.
Six different Chelsea Handlers have played in a returnee season a total of 9 times.
Sophie was Chelsea Handler from her first season?
Yeah. Yeah. She has always been an outlier in the Chelsea Handler type.
Mm-hmm.
She's characterized by getting lots of snarky confessionals, having a strong social game, sometimes being a little nerdy, and having a higher than average strategic acumen. So she checks off half the boxes of a Chelsea Handler and half the boxes of a secretly smart Bikini Babe,
mm-hmm,
or a Meredith Grey. And she's kind of this hybrid of the two. But Chelsea Handler is where she is. Yeah.
Okay.
So the other ones were Jerry, Courtney, Corinne, Sierra, Shireen, and Aubrey. So generally coming back, they get voted out pretty early on.
Okay.
So
how do you personally feel about Sophie on her return?
I'm so conflicted about Sophie. Like she's probably the most intelligent of all the Chelsea Handlers ever, not just the returnee ones, but she's also the least funny, I think. You know, like in terms of that kind of snarky,
I guess you did not listen to the roast of Rob Sesternino.
I recognize that she is, she's got that kind of an intelligent weightiness, but the intensity kind of waters it down a little bit.
I think it's a different sense of humor. I think it's very dry. I think Sophie is very funny, but I think it's a different sense of humor.
I'm trying to remember. Because I remember having a very different feeling about her the last time she was on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But I also remember she's similar to me in this way. So I'm mm-hmm. not criticizing that super fast talk, like not even recognizing, like you made a comment about like, oh, you obviously didn't hear about the roast. I was so busy thinking about what I'm thinking about. I didn't even acknowledge mm-hmm. it. Sophie does that too, you know, so it hurts our social game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm worried about her, but I don't think she's on people's radar as a big threat.
Yeah.
And I hope she's not going to piss people off. Like I think she was super, you know, arrogant in her first season, but she's so much older now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's more mature. She's got a lot more life experience. I think she's benefited a lot from like her best friends being survivors. Like how can you not learn and grow as a survivor player when you're surrounded by it like that,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. I'm worried about Sophie too. I have to be honest that I'm just very concerned that people are going to look at her and she's another person of, oh, she's very smart. She's very smart.
Yes.
And I don't know. I think she knows people, but I don't know if she has very close connections with a ton of people that are going to be out there.
Yeah. And I think you're like, your social ability has to be so like alpha, you know, it has to be the absolute top tier in order to survive these returnee seasons. There's such a negative bias against the intellectual players, and it's frustrating mm-hmm. for me because I don't
me
understand
too. Like, me too, Angie.
Yeah. I mean, I like personally, I don't want to hang out with the athletes, with these brawny players that are not having that level of strategic conversation all the time. And I often think like people like Tony are far less they're far less easy to read. You know, I don't know why the intellectual players are seen as a bigger threat than some of these other.
Well, I think I can tell you players. In the returning season, I think that the first time out, I think that some of these players are often underestimated in terms of that you don't really know by looking at them, you know, just how smart they are. And then when they go on to win, the story is, oh, they won because they're so smart. And mm-hmm. then that's scary. And it isn't something that, you know, helps you out of the gate like being strong does. And so I think that that is a thing that when we're talking about people like Yule and like Sophie, like I think that that ends up being kind of something that really elevates their threat level here in the early going.
For sure, for sure. And I think a lot has to do with the narrative of your original season, too. Like, if you compare with Cochrane, mm-hmm. like, Cochrane's a super smart guy. But in his in her season with Cochrane, mm-hmm. his narrative was about bullying and about...
He was a goofball.
He was a goofball. He was funny. He was, like... not confident. It was all about like coming to terms with just being okay in his own skin. It wasn't about like, mm-hmm. here's this super smart, funny guy who didn't have the numbers go his way, who's getting a second chance. And everyone's like, wait, that's that super smart, mm-hmm. funny guy. I'm not going to let him get to merge.
Yeah.
You know, and if he came back, however,
Angie, mm-hmm? He'd be the first boot of the season.
You think so?
I think so. Yeah.
Because they'd be seeing him as the strategic, smart, intellectual guy.
He's
I feel like
got
he's
everything.
A lot of
he's too smart. He doesn't help in the challenges. He's Jeff's favorite. There's the survivors be player hating, and they don't like that. You know, he's had a lot of success after the show.
He doesn't need the money.
Why do they love him so much? Everything's Cochrane. He gets all the airtime.
I think that's, isn't that you though? Isn't that just you projecting?
Is that not, maybe, but I think, but I speak
it's
for
like
all the survivors. I speak for
hearing?
All the survivors when I say that. I wouldn't go after Cochrane first. I would keep Cochrane around if I was out there.
Yeah. No, you're basically the same person for sure.
I mean, not exactly the same person.
You do not have red hair.
Yeah. But I think that it would be a problem. I think that he correctly stayed home.
Yeah, I was surprised I wasn't surprised. I was saddened that he wasn't part of the cast. But it's like, what does Cochrane have to prove to anybody? Like,
yeah. And he would be out early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I mean, hard to imagine the scenario where, like, the last time he played was such a great setup for him, where everybody that he was on the tribe with loved him, and he wasn't considered a threat. Now he's got everything in the opposite.
Yes. And I also think that there are some players coming out here that there is no way that they can repeat the game that they played mm-hmm. and be successful. And I'm not sure if they... have enough self-awareness to realize that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Cochrane does have the self-awareness. He's like, I can't do anything different than what I did.
He's a smart guy. Yeah. He knew to stay home. Anyway,
yeah, for sure.
You have agreement on Sophie. I feel like that a lot of people feel like around the swap could be when it's curtains for Sophie this time around.
Yeah. I mean, with Sophie, I wouldn't be surprised if she went far, and I wouldn't be surprised if she was an early boot. So super... fancy fencer in there.
Okay. All right. Fifth person out of the season. Who are you seeing, Angie?
Tony Vlachos.
Tony. Oh, no.
Yeah. So okay. this is our Heisenberg. This is another player that would be way better off on a new player season. Like, he comes in sixth if this were a new player season. But the Heisenbergs do not do well when they come back on returnee season. So seven Heisenberg
Angie,
character
you're
types.
Telling me.
Yeah, it's not news. It's not, and I'm sure he's going in like petrified because you know they've seven of them have played nine times in returnee season. So this is Lex, Hatch, Fairplay, Russell, Jervis, Troyzan, and Tony himself. So they either go out pre-merge, which
Tony
is
himself
the most
really brings down the average.
Yeah, it really does. So they usually go out pre-merge, which most of them have, or they come in third. Three of them have come in third. And let's just say I don't think Tony's coming in third this season. So,
yeah.
I mean, I do have this fantasy where Sandra says to Tony, now do you trust me when I say I'm working with you? And Tony and Sandra team up and they keep each other safe.
What a story.
Maybe Kim and Boston Rob join in and we get power players who aren't actually targeting each other. But there's no way any of those players are capable of holding true to an alliance of threats. And even if they did, the other players will overwhelm their numbers, so it doesn't even matter. So Tony's going to Tony. He's going to draw attention to himself, go out early in some spectacular display of showmanship, and that's it.
Yeah, I feel like that this is probably also agreement. I think that people don't think Tony is going to go out like first or second like Game Changers, but could stick around for a little bit. So we'll see. So I think you're on the same page as the chalk right now with Tony as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Sixth out.
Next, we have our first of two of the same character types. So this is going to come up again where we have like two of the same type playing.
Back to
so then, yeah. So the order that I've put them in is just my subjective opinion as to which of the two I think will do better. So next out, we have Nick Wilson. One of two good old boys.
Okay.
So this is an example, another example of where if Nick were coming back as a new player, his placement ranking, it would be remarkably better. So out of the same cast of character types, he would be coming in second or third if it were a new player season.
Mm-hmm.
So five good old boys have played six times in returnee seasons with less than stellar results. So that's Big Tom, Bobby John, JT, Keith Nail, and Caleb Reynolds.
Okay.
So Big Tom and Keith performed the best, both coming in fifth. The rest went out before or right after merge, so not great. So typically the returnee good old boy is not, how can I say this, a strategic mastermind.
Mm-hmm.
So when JT is the best player in the field, you know, that's saying a lot.
But
so
there's something to the idea of the good old boy that the ones that have been successful are the people that are able to sort of, you know, shield themselves, that people underestimate them because they are, they're, you know, from the South. So this is a straight shooter who's going to be honest. And, you know, all these people that you mentioned, maybe with the exception of, you know, Beast Mode Cowboy and Keith Nail, all were able to sort of like dupe people, to underestimate them. They were able to make moves and be able to be, you know, sort of like have people like them and then be able to sort of take advantage of the way that people felt about them because of where they're from. That is not as much of a thing when they return because people say, oh, okay, well, now I know what you do. Now I know what your thing is.
Exactly. They definitely have an advantage in that people like them and trust them. And they have that advantage as soon as they open their mouths. They don't need to even learn anything about these players. As soon as they hear that accent, they seem to get this leg up on a lot of the other players. But returnee seasons, no one gives a shit.
Like, it's a one-time trick.
Yeah, exactly. It's a one-trick pony for sure. So Nick, I believe, is probably the most highly educated good old boy ever cast.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also very knowledgeable about the game and pretty calculating, but he's not fooling anyone. He can't hide behind his good old boy exterior.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he falls into the same area as Yule. He's an easy early first boot because he's enough of a threat that people can feel good about taking the energy to vote him out, but it can come about relatively organically and not draw too much attention to the players who orchestrate it. So yeah, I don't think Nick's getting far at all.
Yeah, I think it's a double whammy also, because in addition to the good old boy thing, which then people say, oh, okay, actually, no, you are actually really smart and it's not, you know, I shouldn't underestimate you. He also has the thing where he lied about being a lawyer in his first season and nobody discovered that. And then all these players, when they come back, that they know that he is a lawyer. So whatever sort of baggage comes along with being a lawyer, then that's also a thing for Nick in this season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, you know, you can really, the more deceptive you are and the more people that you lied to, the, you know, obviously the harder it is to gain any trust in your returnee season. So like these players that were able to come back and say, honestly, I was loyal to the end. I didn't lie to anybody. Even though that is the very definition, I think, of what I'm calling a modest winner.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but you didn't really have to finesse anything. You didn't really have to do any big, amazing strategic plays. That's what makes them a really great candidate to win a returnee season. So that's a really nice segue into Ben, who's at number 14, who's our other good old boy.
Okay. All right.
So Ben, I think, has a way better shot than Nick, and it's for all the reasons I just said.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first, his social game is much stronger, and while he will be seen as a physical threat, he's highly not given a lot of credit for any strategic strengths. And even the social strengths are going to be mostly overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not an obvious triple threat. And I think he's pretty much one of the strongest of the more modest winners.
Yeah. So, I think that it's different for Ben, because for Ben, I think that most people and most fans think, oh, well, he just finds idols. So it's not like that, oh, we underestimated Ben and then he went off and, you know, pulled off all these moves and then was mm-hmm. able to, you know, flip the votes around. That the book on him is going to be that, okay, nice guy, but, you know, he just finds idols. So as long as, you know, we don't let him find idols, then he's not as threatening as some other players who were able to accomplish more things traditionally in their first times out.
Yeah. And he's another one of these players that's going to have something to prove. So he's going to want to show that he is more than an idol finder. And I think he might like Sarah Lucina it right to the end, like the same way she came in with that same, like, no one mm-hmm. recognized me. I have all this potential that no one sees, and really just go for it and see what happens.
See, I think there's a little bit more of a glass ceiling on Ben, where I think that I don't worry about people targeting him at the beginning, but I think once you get to the middle, I think it's like, all right, how long are we going to let Ben stick around to get to the point where now he's in the mix to make the fire, that, you know, it's getting down to less and less people. He can find an idol, but I think that he's like a reliable number to count on, and that you would yeah. want him to be in your alliance in the first part of the game.
He's going to have to really lay low. And, you know, that kind of strategic player that no one realizes is pulling strings behind the scene. If he can't do that, then he really doesn't have a shot. Because, yeah, if he's being flashy or showy at all, mm-hmm. he's done for.
Yeah. Okay. But I feel like that Nick and Ben, I think you have agreement. But I think that you and I are on the same page, that I think that we both agree that Ben is going to go further than people think he's going to go.
Right. Okay. And likely further than Nick, I would say.
I would agree with that. Okay. All right. Before we get to the people that are going to potentially make the merge, if they merge at 13, I want to take a moment and thank a sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at ZipRecruiter. Of course, when you're hiring, that, you know, a lot of times you don't have the cons type system to be able to give you all the data of who a good candidate might be. Oh, okay. This person is a Heisenberg. Definitely don't want them as part of my corporation. That's why hiring is challenging, but there's one place we can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, and growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That's why Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Mishkowitz, experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. But then he switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference, and you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/survive. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates faster. In fact, after posting his job to ZipRecruiter, Dylan was amazed by how quickly great candidates were applying, and he found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder that 4 to 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/survive. That's ZipRecruiter.com/survive. That's ZipRecruiter.com/survive. Okay, Angie, who is going to survive to the merge, but only to be the merge boot?
Our dear, sweet, beloved Tyson.
Tyson.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is yet another character type that does way better if it's a brand new season. 5 surfer dudes have played in returnee seasons 10 times. So that's Ethan, Ozzy, Tyson himself, Wu, Aris, and Joe.
Mm-hmm.
A funny aside is when I put this list together in my notes, I totally forgot about Aris. Like, my eyes just passed over him on the spreadsheet. I was like, yep, that's all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Tyson and Ozzy make up the majority of the statistics for this. And Tyson is the only surfer dude to ever win a returnee season. So, you know, I think he's, you know, he's just a huge target. He's going to be a huge target, I think. But after, like, after Boston Rob, this is my question for everyone. After Boston Rob, really, who has more in-game experience than Tyson? He's tied with Sandra, Ozzy, Parvati, Rupert. And in fact, my next hot take, I've been binge watching Hell's Kitchen with my daughters.
All right.
We love Gordon. The winner of Hell's Kitchen is usually the chef, not who comes in the strongest, but the chef who has shown the most improvement over the course of the competition. And through that lens, my hot take is I think Tyson is the best Survivor player of all time. Boom. I said it.
Okay. All right. So what has led you to that conclusion?
Because he gets substantially wiser, more savvy, and more social every single time he plays. You know, I think there's an argument to be made that the season that he won was tougher than, say, Redemption Island. And he did it on his third try rather than his fourth. I think there, you know, because who are the players that are considered to be the best players? Is Boston Rob, is Parvati, is Sandra, you know? I don't, like when I was saying that there's some players that I think they can come back and play the same game and be successful. Boston Rob is who I'm thinking of, like this idea that somehow he can come back and play a season with seasoned, savvy players and have that kind of stranglehold on the whole game. I don't believe that's possible if he wasn't playing on a tribe of new players that didn't know any better. Whereas Tyson came back and he so successfully navigated through that and managed to get to the end with people who were like truly loyal and truly liked him. And, you know, there was no bitterness at the end. You know, it's like, it's a really remarkable thing that he managed to do. And like, he was such a, like, if you look back at Tokachin's, like, what a remarkable transformation that was between that goofball who just really just didn't know his ass from his elbow to like every time he played, he came out like, okay, now I understand more and more and more. So it's like, I'm curious to see what that looks like moving forward. Cause I think like now even he's learned even more than the season that he won.
I just want to put a little bit more of a point on your prediction. Are you saying that coming in, you feel like Tyson is one of the best players of all time, or at the end of this season that you feel like that people will also be very much in agreement, Tyson, one of the best all-time players? It will not be as hot of a take.
I think he already is.
Okay. All right.
That's what I'm saying.
Because I only just want to add that this is something that Tyson brought up with, I believe it was with Dalton Ross, something that was important to him to have that sort of consideration. So I'm sure that he would be very happy to hear you say this.
It's something, no, I truly believe it. Like, do I, you know, and again, it's a different frame of looking at it, you know, because when I talk about Kim a little later, it's going to sound like I think she's the greatest player of all time as well. I think that there's a different way of, you know, kind of framing how we determine this, you know, I know, like, isolated one season only, their first time out, I think Kim is the strongest.
Sure.
But, you know, in terms of, that's why I was saying it, like in terms of like that lens of Hell's Kitchen of like who has shown the most growth potential, because it's, that doesn't stop when people come in strong. They may have already peaked. That may be the best we're ever going to get, you know, whereas Tyson shows this exponential growth every single time. But he's also like, everybody is so aware of him and his personality and his connections and his ability to really take, the reins of the game. I feel like it's going to be very difficult for him to get even to the merge. I think he's really going to be targeted. So,
yeah, I think he'll be okay. I think he's got good connections with people. I don't think that he's going to be seen as the biggest threat. So I'm higher on Tyson than where the system has him. But it sounds like you're lower on Tyson than where the system has him.
I No, I think it's probably around here, maybe a little bit earlier. Again, I think these power winners coming in, I just can't see the other winners letting them get far enough to really cause any damage, mm-hmm. you know? And I also think that there's this kind of phenomena, where like there's a next level of gameplay from some of these power players who feel like they're going to be knocked out really early. And it comes with like an acceptance that they're not going to win. Mm-hmm. And so they're trying to like YOLO it with the time that they have, and they start doing crazy shit. Like, I'm really afraid he's going to be so hell bent on being like super devious that he may screw himself over. Like the way Tony came out and he's like, I'm just going to like, woohoo, I'm looking for an idol because I'm going to be first boot anyway. You know, he made that happen by just trying to make a splash with what time he had. So I think some of them have a perception that they're going to be targeted super early and then may potentially sabotage their own game because of it, you know? So it's a big debate. Like, what do you do as a returning player like Sandra and Tony? Do you just try and have as much fun and get as much screen time as you can in the first couple of episodes? Or do you legitimately just try and win, and just like, if you get voted out second or third, then so be it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's tough.
I don't know the answer.
I don't know. I feel like that Sandra in Game Changer sort of laid out the blueprint of how you want to try to attack it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she was really making moves, and she was not playing under the radar at all.
Actually, I would say probably Suri in Game Changers laid out the blueprint of try not to go to Tribal Council until the merge and see if people forget about you.
Yeah, that's the way I would do it. But again, it's like, do you want to be a TV character or do you want to try and win again? You know, you have to decide, because you want to be like, in, I don't know, in a lot of ways, being like a fan favorite is kind of better than winning.
Not $2 million. I think you'd rather win $2 million than leave the casino. I think that's really what you would most like to do.
Yeah, probably. And yeah. I mean, and Tyson takes that very seriously. Like, this is a challenge to win the money for him. I don't think he necessarily cares about the prestige and the notoriety, but he's such a card. Like, he's such a comedian. I think I don't know if he'll be able to hold it in, you know?
Okay. All right. After Tyson, who do you have, Angie?
Our second server dude, who is Ethan.
Ethan. Okay.
Yeah. So, first of all, I think the only person who feels like old school versus new school is being a thing is actually Ethan.
Yeah, right? I agree.
So, I mean, I loved Ethan when I watched Africa Live. I was happy when he won. At the time, I even thought he was the best player. It's just that the game is so different now. Mm-hmm. And I can't help but think that Ethan is in way over his head. Mm-hmm. And no way does he have the chops to navigate Modern Survivor making winning moves. He is the Troy Zan of this season. He's not going to be like,
you think he's a zero vote finalist?
Yep. He's not going to be a physical or strategic threat. He's going to be super nice.
But you know what the difference is between Ethan and Troy Zan is, right? Troy Zan doesn't have a story about how he beat cancer twice.
Do winners care?
Yes.
Honestly.
Yeah, I think they do.
Don't.
Yeah. I mean, that Ethan has raised, I believe the latest figure I saw was $80 million with grassroots soccer for AIDS mm-hmm. research. I mean, that you sit next to that man in the final three, you better have one hell of a story.
So the returning winning players donated $80 million to his charity, is what you're telling me?
He raised $80 million.
I know. I'm just saying. The returning, like, they don't care. It's like, they're like, boo-hoo. I think that they're going to be doing
it. The man is a professional speaker.
I think
there will be a dry eye in the house if Ethan gets the final Tribal Council.
I think Troy Zan was also a very well-liked player.
Hey.
I think all that matters is the moves that you made. You know? I really, maybe I'm underestimating the power of the narrative at the end.
Yeah.
But I just see him being a solid number for someone like Jeremy or Wendell, and everyone's going to keep putting off voting him out because no one's going to care. And then, I see him getting very close to the final three, if not in the final three, and just not getting any votes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like, how many, like, working class single moms have we seen at the end that people were like, I don't care. Like, what did you do to get there?
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Okay. I think you're low on Ethan as well. The system is too low on Ethan and Tyson. But it sounds like you think that he will go far, but not win.
Yeah, I think he's going really far, but I don't think he's winning.
Okay. All right. All right. Those are the surfer guys. Okay. So in 11th place, who do you got?
I got Adam Klein, okay. Our pony boy. So this is way, way better than he would be if he were in a new player season.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because the only returning pony boys to play the game are Brandon Hance and Eric Reichenbach, and both of which are nothing like Adam. So the pony boy type in older seasons tended to be a goofy young guy and a weirdo job. But mm-hmm. in more recent seasons, the pony boy is still a male player on the fringes of mainstream, but can also be a highly intelligent, strategic player. And Adam falls into this newer evolution of the type.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he might have a decent chance here. Like, he's definitely in the category of the more underwhelming winners, but has the strategic ability to play a winning game. So yeah, I think he's going to fly under the radar and make the merge for sure.
Okay. I think that the... Do not have agreement here. I think that I've seen a lot of people chalk picking Adam. Could be out early. It could be one of these people, like we're talking about, like a Sophie and a Yule. He's got the thing going for him. He's smart. He's smart. He knows all the seasons. He knows all of us. And then I think that he has connections to a lot of people, but I don't know if he has like deep relationships with a lot of the players.
Right.
So
I don't know why. I feel like him and Nick are going to team up. I don't. Yeah. Maybe their age and their knowledge of the game, and they probably know each other socially now, and they're in the same kind of.
I think that's the move for the newer players to band together. I think that that would be the way out. Unfortunately, they're not all on the same tribe.
No.
Okay. All right. Top 10, baby.
Yeah, top 10. Here we go. So number 10 is Denise Stapley, our tough old broad.
Okay. Tell me about Denise here.
So this is roughly the same place as she would have been on a new season as well. So the tough old broad has come back to play 5 times, but has never won. So that is Tina, Kathy Favrick O'Brien, Monica Culpepper, and Debbie Wanner. So of these returning players, Monica did the best.
Mm-hmm.
She did it for Monica. She did the best by coming in second to Tyson. So
yes.
Denise won a season against 3 returning players in a predominantly new player season.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like she has an advantage because of this. She has had to outplay returning players before, and she's played enough of a quiet game that she won't be seen as one of the bigger threats. So she's actually one of my favorite winners, like just in terms of like, you know, just like who do you like who has won Survivor? Denise is one of those ones that I think often gets overlooked. But I like how stealthy she was. I like how what a physical threat she was. And she's still under 50. So I think she'll be able to give the impression of being past her prime while still packing a punch. Because I thought she was older. Like I looked on Wikipedia to find out, you know, like, oh, is she like 55 now or whatever? She's my age. Mm-hmm. I didn't expect that at all. So it's like, okay, well, I'm out of shape, but I think Denise will still be like a total powerhouse. So.
Yeah, she's a great athlete.
Yeah, and she's a great listener. And, you know, I've learned from Tyson that that is a key strength in doing well at Survivor. And what I worry about with Denise is she is not duplicitous enough to manage this field of players. Mm-hmm. Like, she's one of these people that's able to say that, you know, she played her season without really screwing anyone over. She didn't super duper lie.
That's not what Russell Swan told me. They remember her and Malcolm did a number on him that they basically like they totally ended up like selling him a bill of goods.
Yeah, but you know these people, like someone like Tony, that just completely just screwed over every single person is what I'm thinking of. Like someone I think could walk into the season and think Denise is a good solid person to have an alliance with. She was loyal to Malcolm right to the end. Like Malcolm was the one who betrayed her, not the other way around. And I think that she will do well because she has that. That history of that's what people know about her. But I do wonder
right
how strong of a liar she is.
I feel like that of the 20 people here, I think that she's probably the person who is least likely to go back on their word. If Denise mm-hmm. gives you her word on something, I feel like I would trust her the most out of the entire field of 20. I feel like that she would not be somebody with that extra lack of integrity to be able to just double cross you and not feel bad about it.
Yeah, I'm just thinking it through to see if I agree with that. I think I agree. Maybe the only person that I would put anywhere near that, maybe Wendell. I feel like if Wendell...
Oh, I think he's got you in a good place then.
Yeah. I feel like he gave his word to Lauren and Dominic and he kept his word to Lauren and Dominic,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think if he really...
I'm going to stick with Denise.
Yeah. I definitely think Denise is higher up in that area for sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So there's Denise at number 10. We're at number 9.
We're at number 9. And this is Amber Mariano.
Okay.
Who is the Little Red Riding Hood, which is probably the biggest departure from the original character type, because the Little Red Riding Hood is typically very kind of naive and young and doe-eyed. And she is definitely not that. If looking back at the system's winning rank order rather than placement order, then Little Red Riding Hood has come back 4 times and won 1 of those times. So that means that, and that winning player was Amber. Mm-hmm. So with that said, this, in terms of win potential alone, the system has Amber at number 1, most likely to win, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah. Okay. But not the first time I've heard that.
Yeah. But because of Kat, the cats and the Jennas, however, the placement ranking, which is more like the predicted boot order, she's way down at 9th. So, I personally really like Amber's chances. I think she's going to be the one to beat this season, because not only
the
has
one
she
to
already,
beat.
Yeah, I'm gonna let the cat out of the bag and say that Amber is my winner pick.
Winner pick. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Let's talk that through. How do you see that taking place?
Okay.
Do people forget about her? Does she play a totally different game? What do you think?
I think what she's got going for her is not only is she won a returnee season, so she knows her way around a little bit, but no one credits her for that win. So she's not going to be seen as a threat.
She and us.
Right. She's been married to Boston Rob. So she's had the benefit of their combined survivor experience for her entire adult life. So she was there when Rob wrote the BR rules. She's lived and breathed survivor her whole adult life and knows it instinctively by now. I'm sure that they as a couple are counting on Rob being targeted early. Mm-hmm. And they have devised an entire playbook on how Amber will get to the end on her own. But she's also her own person, and I do believe she's going to bring her own gameplay into it. She's had 4 kids and a ton of lived experience by now. And unlike her husband, she is not going to be, I think, trying to have a stranglehold on the game the entire way through. Nor will she be counting, I think, on winning final immunities.
Mm-hmm.
And this is likely the only point where I will mention the Edge of Extinction.
Yes.
Because I think it benefits Rob and Amber so much, it is almost like it was included just for them.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Right? I'm just going to leave that there.
Well, let's talk this through, because I feel like that I was where you were on Amber. I felt mm-hmm. like she did have a very good chance to win this thing, but I actually think that the Edge of Extinction kills Amber's chances to win, because I feel like Rob is going to be targeted early. And I feel like that in a normal season, that then people forget about Amber because, okay, Rob is gone. What's she going to do? Who's worried about Amber now? And then watch her all of a sudden. She's in the end game and watch out. Now, all of a sudden, you leave Amber in the game. Rob's on the edge of extinction. I think Rob is probably one of the people with the best chances to return from the edge of extinction, not to mention he's sending her advantages in the game. I think that the edge of extinction is terrible for Amber.
I think that's a risk that they're going to have to work with. I hear where you're coming from, and I do think that that is going to be on people's minds. I don't think that alone will make her more of a target than someone like Parvati or Kim. Mm-hmm. Or like, there's so many threats out there to get out of the way. I don't think that, I don't think that's a big enough worry. And also, like, Rob's kind of old now. Like, are you really going to count on the fact on him being able to win out over these younger players, these super physical players, these mental powerhouse? Like, you send Yule out first. Is there any guarantee that Rob's going to be able to beat Yule at some of these challenges out there, or outthink some, you know, or outperform physically some of these other people? I think it's, you know, I hear what you're saying. And I don't disagree that that's going to come into play. I do think that she is such an undercredited winner, probably the least credited winner that's playing. They 100% think that without Rob whispering in her ear, she's going to be useless. And I think they're completely wrong.
Yeah. If there was an Edge of Extinction, I think she would be a real threat to win this thing. But it would be survivor malpractice for any of these players that I have so much respect for to forget about her when there's a chance Rob is coming back into the game. I mean, how could you sit let her sit there at the final seven or whatever, and then there is, you know, a 10% chance, a 15% chance maybe, that Boston Rob is going to be walking back into the game, and now they're both here.
Do you think for that reason, do you think people would be stupid enough to target Amber before Rob?
I mean, I think that there is a world where you go to the first tribal council and Amber's on your tribe, and it's like, well, you know, we got to get rid of both of them eventually, so we might as well send her out. But she's on the tribe with Sandra. I feel like that Sandra's probably a bigger target. But I just think that Amber could easily get under the radar if Rob was gone. But then also, you know, that they have the ability to send stuff back into the game.
Yeah,
you think
I know.
Rob can't find idols or whatever, find different advantages on the Edge of Extinction, that he's not going to be sending care packages left and right. So I think that you have to target Amber.
That would be a reason why I would want to align with Amber, because Rob's over there sending, you know, he's sending her care packages.
Ask Jenna Lewis how this is going to play out. You know, okay, great. Now you align with Amber, and now, okay, Rob comes back, and then you're on the outside looking in again.
Yeah, no, that's true. I guess I'm just not, I don't think it's a fait accompli that Rob gets his way back in. I know that he probably thinks that's a done deal. And I think he's very, foolish.
If he is out early, that I think that I do not think that this is how he would look at it, but he should raise the flag and go home from the Edge of Extinction. And that they have, you know, all the kids at home, that it would be peace of mind for Amber. And I feel like that's the only way that she gets a shot here, because you're not going to forget about what's going on with Boston Rob on the Edge of Extinction. He needs, if they want a shot at this $2 million, he needs to fully sacrifice himself. He gets voted out, he should walk off the island. Go back to the island with his heads on it. And this isn't a knock on Rob at all.
Yeah.
It's just that his shadow looms so large over what's going to be happening in the main game. If he left and could somehow, like, you know, signal to everybody, okay, I'm gone now, I think Amber has a shot to play her game. And she could win this season.
There's merit in what you're saying for sure. I just feel like doing something as a team is always makes you stronger than trying to do it alone. I think the advantages of him staying there and being on her team outweigh the disadvantages of everyone knowing that he's there and helping her.
Yeah. Hey, look, there's a
toss up. It's hard to say.
Forget about Amber winning. Like, if you're just worried about, hey, they're completely in this together, it doesn't matter who wins, then he should stay, because, you know, there is a non-zero chance he comes in and underwoods this thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got like two shots at this.
Yeah, no, they do. They do. And it's kind of, it's kind of unfair that they're the only ones that get to come in and show up with a teammate. It's kind of brutal.
Mm-hmm.
But he's number 8. So why don't we segue right into Rob? Yeah.
Okay.
So he's our John McClane, which in his ranking is pretty much identical. He'd be coming in a ninth if this. Mm-hmm. He's the only character type to win a returnee season twice. And these two winners are facing off against each other in this season.
Okay.
So
John McClane is.
Yeah. So the other returning John McClanes include Colby, James Clement, Malcolm, and Jeremy Collins. Mm-hmm. So they've played 10 times. So their win rate is trailing Amber's by 5%. So even though they've won twice because they've played so many times, the Little Red Riding Hood is still more likely to win a returnee season. But it's still making, they're still pretty high up there. They're second highest ranked.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So stats aside, things being what they are, you know, I think we all know that no way in hell does Rob make it this far unless he fights his way back from Edge of Extinction. So he's getting clipped in the first few votes for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds about right. I would think so. You are definitely higher than the consensus. You do not have agreement on Boston Rob coming in eighth place on this season.
They think way sooner than that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that probably, you know, it would be a miracle for Boston Rob to see the merge in this season.
Yeah. And I mean, even target aside, like Rob is a bossy boots. It's his one move. And he may be a likable bossy boots, but he lacks the fluidity to navigate through a game at this level. So 0% chance of winning the game.
Smarten up.
I think that's true even if he tries to Chris Underwood it. Mm-hmm. I think people are going to come back and say, forget it.
Okay. All right. Tell me about seventh place, Angie.
Seventh place is our second John McClane, who is Jeremy Collins.
Okay, Jeremy Collins here at seven. Okay, tell me about Jeremy.
I feel that Jeremy is one of the strongest non-threatening male winners.
Mm-hmm.
So as a previous winner of an all-returnee season, he knows how to navigate through these power players and keep us cool. He's very charming and capable. He knows the game well enough to know the styles of each player. He already has an existing relationship with Natalie, which I think will help them both get further in the game. He's a triple threat who knows when to be aggressive and when to chill out. But his recent returnee win may be instilling an inflated sense of confidence that may blind him to what's actually happening. I think that he can get a little high on himself at times. Mm-hmm. And I need him to stay right-sized if he wants to do well.
So do you think he can do it?
Yeah, I absolutely think he can do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, I don't think a guy is more likely to win, is likely to win the season, but I mean, it's 50-50 shot.
50-50 shot. Are you higher or lower than the system is on Jeremy?
I think I can see him going out right about here. Maybe as high as fifth place.
Okay. Yeah.
If he,
don't let him get close to the end.
Yeah.
Got to stand it his way.
Yeah. He knows it really well too. Like, and he knows these players. So anyway.
Yeah. Great social threat, Jeremy. Okay.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
All right. Top six.
Top six. Number six is Sandra, our mommy dearest. Sandra,
okay. So you are way higher on Sandra than almost anybody else I've talked to. The system is. This is not Angie Conce's. The system.
Yeah, it is not my opinion. This is just the stats alone. And the new player rankings would have her at number one. So Sandra, the queen, is definitely one of the power players who will definitely be targeted. And she is for sure the, you know, the fool me once, shame on me winner. Like no one can let her get to the merge or it's lights out. And everybody knows that. So I think she's, she doesn't have a hope in hell. She is such a huge target on her back. The funny thing about Sandra is she has this way of downplaying her strengths, which is really fascinating to me. She really like plays up her inability to do things, you know, and she, her way of using truth as the foundation for most of her manipulations, which makes her arguments seem so reasonable. It's funny. It's like you can see the players like recognizing like, oh, this is Sandra. I shouldn't believe anything she's saying. And then immediately saying, but she's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's so right. We should do that thing because she's right.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she isn't a challenge threat, that's the only thing that's going to help her move forward, I think. Because there is that notion that I can pick her off at any time. You know,
mm-hmm.
So of all the sharks circling around, of all the power, superpower players, she may be the one that manages to last the longest. Maybe Tyson could mm-hmm. get further than her. But I just feel like when you're looking down the barrel of Boston Rob and Parvati and Kim and Sandra, Sandra's the one you leave till later because you know she's not going to win the challenge and get the, you know, get the immunity necklace, or she's not going to be the one finding the idol out in the jungle. So you know, it's just a little bit safer to procrastinate on that one, I think.
Okay. All right. So we'll see. It'd be a miracle if we can get Sandra to six.
Yeah. I don't think that's happening in okay. a million years, but yeah.
All right.
A girl can wish.
All right. Top five, baby.
Top five. Yeah. Our fifth place player is Natalie Anderson.
Natalie Anderson, 20. Let's go.
Right. There is no wider swing between the new player and returnee stats than this character type. For the new players, the Oh No You Didn't is ranked dead last in the placement order.
Mm-hmm.
They have an abysmal track record. And it's so bad that Natalie's number one win didn't even put a dent in it.
Mm-hmm.
But thanks to the performance of Alicia and Abby Maria, Natalie's mm-hmm. Placement rate has jumped from 26th to 3rd.
Oh.
Yeah. So okay. if she was a new player season, no good. But because she's a returnee, they do really well. And the reason why is in past returnee seasons, this character type has not been seen as a winner threat,
mm-hmm.
which is why I think typically they're able to get close to the end. This will not be the case with Natalie.
Yes, you feel like that people will be gunning for her.
She's a very good player, so I don't think anyone's overlooking her. But she definitely won't be seen as the biggest threat.
Mm-hmm.
So really, as long as she doesn't get into disagreements with other players, which is yeah. not, which it's not unlikely.
she has that. That's feisty. A thing for her. That's a thing for her. I would say that I don't think that the other players are going to be particularly intimidated by her game. I just think that she is in incredible shape. That mm-hmm. I just think that as a physical threat, I think you're never going to forget about her. She is, maybe, you know, the person that's in the best shape on the entire season.
Yeah, that's possible. I think Denise might be up there too, but yeah, for sure. Like Denise looks like a bodybuilder, for God's sake. But
mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. And there tends to be a trend. I might be a little bit, being influenced by Australian Survivor here, but there tends to be a trend where the first individual immunity, the most athletic girl wants to prove something mm-hmm. to herself and to her tribe. I just want to show them that I deserve to be her. And really all it does is makes everyone say, oh my God, we need to get rid of her next.
I don't think she has the throw challenges gear.
No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. No way. No way. And she's very assertive, and she's very much likely to like pick a target and vocalize it, which could very well blow up in her face. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a bit high.
Yeah.
Fifth place for Natalie, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. I'm not going to rule it out for Natalie.
Okay. All right. There you go. So we have then on fifth place, Natalie Anderson. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Top four. Who is losing out in the fire making?
So this is the highest ranking man in this season, and that is Wendell.
Wendell. Oh, yeah. This time around, Wendell can't make the fire.
No. So that's our alpha male control freak. So this is only the third time that this character type has played a returnee season. And the other players were Scoopin, who is a terrible human, and Andrew Savage, who is a terrible player. So Wendell is the only man within the top six placement ranking. Mm-hmm. And I do think the system is onto something here. I think if a dude's gonna pull it off, my bet is on Wendell.
Okay.
Easy to be around. He's aggressive when he needs to be. He's shown that he's loyal to his alliance, which makes him seem trustworthy to others. He tied at Final Tribal, which I think makes him look like he's not a mm-hmm. huge winner threat.
It's a good point.
And, yeah. And I think Wendell has a great chance to skate by while everyone's like looking the other way. So I do think if a guy's going to do it, I think Wendell's where I would put my money. If we're in the casino, I'm putting the chips on Wendell.
Okay. All right. You also say that if Wendell makes a promise to you, that he is the least likely person to break that promise to you.
Other than Denise.
And feel bad about it.
Yeah. I think that he is the most likely to stick to his word.
Okay.
Okay. So it's not like I'm not saying that he's not going to lie and manipulate. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that if Wendell sits down and says, I'm giving you, Rob, my word as a man that I will do X, Y, Z, that you can take that to the bank. I don't think he would.
If he says, I got you, he's got you.
Then he's got you. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't believe he'd be saying that to everybody.
All right. So there you go. There's Wendell at 4. I know that you are a big fan of the person that Wendell tied with's game. Dominic.
Brokenhearted. Yep. Yes. I love Dominic.
Yes. So is this that was just the two of them come out? You feel like that was like the two greatest game players? Because I think this is very high praise for Wendell as well.
Yeah. I thought they were both incredibly strong. And the fact that they didn't turn on each other, that they gave each other their word and that they kept that word, I thought was remarkable to watch. It was interesting to see that play out because we often ask ourselves, like, you know, why would you target that person so early? All it did was, you know, you put a target on your back and you went out early because you did it. It's like, well, then we had that season play out. And had I not done that, that would have been the outcome is then I just would have tied and lost by one or whatever. So.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think Dominic is amazing. I think they were both highly worthy of it. I would have been fine with it either way.
Okay. Now you have an all-female final three here.
I do.
Are you manifesting this?
I don't think I need to.
Okay. All right. So let's hear it. Okay. We have our three players, I'm trying to think of who is still out there. I know one easy off the top of my head. I'm trying to think of who else is out there. But okay, let's get into who's third place.
Third place, I've got our first of two Aaron Brockovich players, and this is Danny Boatwright.
Danny Boatwright, okay.
And I flipped her and the other Aaron Brockovich back and forth, I think, three times before I settled on Danny coming in third instead of second.
Okay.
So, So just for background, three Aaron Brockoviches have played in returnee seasons. So that's Amy Cusack, Laura Moret, and Tasha Fox. So, and Aaron Brockovich has never won a returnee season. So their win rate is absolutely in the crapper. So they're like ninth place in terms of being able to win, but their placement rate is very high. And I think Danny, if there was someone I was going to make my winner pick who wasn't Amber, it would be Danny.
See, so yeah, I buy it more for Danny. I think that Danny could do the Amber without Boston Rob.
Yes. I think she is poised to take the season by the winner balls. She has the intelligence, the wisdom, the social ability to handle the complex situation. She's a business owner, a sports talk show host, which is not an easy gig for a chick. Let's face it. She's the mom of two boys, professional football player for her husband. She knows what's up. The best part is no one out there is worried about Danny. So my only real fear for her is that she has not immersed herself enough in recent Survivor to really understand the complexities of the modern game. So I do think, though, that she can think on her feet and stay fluid. And she's definitely going really deep in the game, even if she doesn't win the whole thing.
What was the character type for Danny again?
She's an Aaron Brockovich.
Aaron Brockovich. Okay.
So generally, that person is not quite as much of a celebrity or not quite as successful as Danny is. And at the time, she was more at the beginning of her career. You know, I think she was still doing talk shows and stuff like that, but she wasn't like, I don't know if she was really like ESPN level yet, you know?
Yeah, I think she did like one season of a fantasy football show on ESPN.
Yeah, like what characterizes the Aaron Brockovich type is a woman, and this is like why she's named the Aaron Brockovich, is someone who is very social, very attractive, that is able to kind of talk her way through situations, be very charming, but is not super notable in her like life accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Erin Brockovich, the person in real life, was able to deliver the quality and caliber of a highly, you know, educated top tier lawyer, but she didn't even finish high school and she's really, you know, kind of crude and crass, but like really hilarious to be around and very compelling as a social human being. So, you know, the character type is supposed to be that kind of everyday, like the John McClane, that everyday kind of person who is comes in without anyone thinking, you know, oh, she's the poker player, she's going to win, or she's the med student, she's going to win. She's the one that nobody really thinks about, but then just turns out to be remarkably good at being, you know, under the radar, or just remarkably good at being average.
Yeah, I just worry that she has almost no connections to anybody in this season. I don't know who is dying to work with her.
Yeah, and I think that she's kind of going to be on the outer circle for a little while, but I think she's going to, because she's not going to be really targeted. She might be able to get, you know, she might Shane Gould it a little bit, you know, like be like on the radar, maybe at the beginning, like, she's not really with anybody, but at the same time, just get overlooked until she works her way in. I also, like, maybe this is my own life experience that's really biasing me here. I think socially, the women that are at this supreme disadvantage in terms of getting in with anybody are the ones who aren't mothers. Because there's only three of them. And believe me, I can start a conversation with anyone else with kids simply because we have kids and we have this shared lived experience that means so much to us. Like, I really, any walk of life at all, we can start up a conversation about being a mom. And Dani has that. And that alone will help her relate to a lot of the other players out here. And they're all like, some of them are super new moms. They're going to be really missing their babies. And she's going to want to know all the stupid stories that no one else is going to want to know. She's going, oh, I remember when they were so bad. You know, I'm telling you, she's going to have them eating out of her hand.
Okay. So do you have Dani as a zero vote finalist?
I don't. Okay. I think if Dani, like Dani seems like, she seems very, I think she's highly intelligent. And I think that it didn't come through her edit, because part of her interpretation of how to get to the end in her season was how to manipulate production to do it to a certain extent. You know, like when, I heard this story, I think it was Toby was telling me that she tested saying something in a confessional to see if it would get around to her tribe mates, and it did. So then she stopped, you know, giving them the strategic conversations in the confessional. And then it was more like, well, I guess I'll just try my best and I'll see. And, you know.
Allegedly, yes.
Allegedly. I don't know. You know, I cannot verify. You know, maybe Toby just read that on Twitter and it's complete BS.
Yes.
I feel like because the type of jobs that she's had and the type of world that she's had to live in, which is very, very competitive, very political, very male. Mm-hmm. I think she's probably very, very good at that kind of social politicking.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of faith in her ability to be able to read the situation, even coming in kind of cold without the in-depth knowledge of, you know, idol play or how to, you know, correctly strategize around the immunity challenges or whatever. I think she'll do okay for herself.
Okay. All right. So you got two queens left.
Yes.
One is number one. One is number two. Which one do you want to give us?
I'm going to give you number two.
Okay.
According to the system, coming in second is Kim Spradlin.
Wow. Okay. Well, what a season this would be with it coming down to Kim and Parvati at the end. Tell me about Kim Spradlin here at number two.
She is an incredible player and everyone knows it.
Mm-hmm.
She is what I would call a survivor intuitive. She doesn't have to try and get it.
Mm-hmm.
She just gets it like Mozart gets music. She's the best liar I've ever seen play the game. She's the player I absolutely want to see win this season.
Mm-hmm.
But this is no secret. Like, the only people who don't think Kim is a top tier player are maybe like the odd neck beards who still think Russell was robbed, you know? And because of that, I can't see her not getting targeted early. And I think the power target order will be something like Rob, Parvati, Kim, and then Tyson. Mm-hmm. But if some miracle of her charm and intellect, she secures a loyal alliance, yeah, she can ride with it to the end and then watch out. And that's where, you know, when you say like Danny doesn't have the connections, these power players are going to be desperate to find people who are willing to work with them. And I think that's where Danny's going to come in and say, sure, I'll be a number for you, Kim. And yeah, can I just say on a personal note too, at the Austin KIA, the first thing I asked Kim's husband, Brian, when I met him was if Kim would play again if asked. And he answered with a hard no because of their three very young boys. And I spent 20 minutes leaning on him about...
Wait, like, are you taking credit for Kim playing in this season?
I'm taking credit in potentially lightly influencing her husband by giving him the guilt trip of his life. Yes. I said that.
You're saying you changed the course of Survivor history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I got to tell you, because
let me give you a list of numbers to work on next.
He was like,
can you do anything about the edge of extinction, Angie?
I'm working on it. I'll try. But no, I was met with absolute fear and panic. And he was also super shaken by what I had said, because I think he knew that I was right and he had to let her go. Mm-hmm. And, I was saying, like, move in with your mother if you have to. It's 2 months that's going to be, she will regret it for the rest of her life, and you can't do that to her. And she won't go if you say, I don't want you to go, she won't go. So
if Kim does bad this season, can she blame you?
Yes.
Okay.
She's going to be like, wow, like Brian was super weirdly supportive. I wasn't expecting. Well, also her boys are a lot older now. So this is when like the youngest was still a baby, and Brian was like, it's so overwhelming. And you know, like two, like having young boys is like a circus. But yeah. And I like comparatively, I think I spent maybe a minute and a half with Kim, but within that minute and a half, I was ready to do anything for her and like do anything she asked, give her anything she wanted. She is so...
Yeah, she's
charming.
Great. She is yes. She is a superhero. So okay.
Brian also said something kind of funny. Brian was saying that there was no point, because I'm like, what is it like having arguments with Kim? And he said there's no point. She's so good at it that he only like quote unquote wins arguments because she gives up because she feels sorry for him.
Yeah. Okay. I am actually, I feel like higher than the consensus. Not this high though. Not final two high.
I wish.
Okay.
I would love for Kim to win this season. I really, really would. But
it's a beautiful dream.
A beautiful, beautiful dream.
Okay. Now tell me about your winner pick, Parvati. I have not seen this really, I don't think from anybody else, their pick to win the season, Parvati Shallow. Tell me, how is this going to work?
Well, let's just be clear. This is what the system says.
Okay, the system says this.
The system says that like statistically ranking placement, the Siren does the best in returnee seasons. I personally do not think that Parvati's going to win. I'm going with the highest ranking winner ranking, which is Amber. So, but the Siren does do extremely well. Three Sirens have returned five times and won once. And
Parvati,
Wentworth, and Brenda are the three Sirens. They do extremely well in returnee seasons. Even Wentworth's 10 place finish, their placement rate is still like 4.6, which is a full 2 points lower, which is good. You want to be as low as possible than the next best character type at 6.3, which is the Aaron Brockovich. So extremely high placement rate. And what's interesting to note about Parvati is she's the only player that's in the top five for both the placement rankings and the win rankings. So if she weren't such a power player that everybody knows is an incredible threat, she would be the strongest statistically to put your money on. The Siren has tied with John McClain for the second highest win rate in returnee seasons. And I think the reason why the Siren does so well is mostly because they are so supremely underestimated their first time playing. So But because Parvati is arguably the best power winner in the season, I think it's highly unlikely she's finishing number one or anywhere close to it.
Be a tough road for her. She has played with big targets on her back before. So we'll see. We'll see. Well, what a dream season you've laid out for us here today from the system. The system is real. Is coming into 2020 wide-eyed and bushy-tailed.
I have a dream. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, wow. What a way to end the streak of five straight male winners with an all-women final three of Danny, Kim, and Parvati.
And Parvati. Wouldn't that be amazing? Oh, my God. Yeah. But no, it's I think it's going to be one of these more quieter winners that end up like top five. Yes. Maybe one of these. One of the medium threat people will get top five, but
yeah. All right.
That's it. That's all I have for you.
Okay. Well, any other predictions? Anything else that you're sensing? Not even from the system.
That I don't know. I think that. It's hard to live up to the hype, mm-hmm. you know, like we've been waiting for this for so long and I'm really trying to just cool my jets and, you know, I'm trying to put more focus on Australian Survivor. So I just like, I don't want to be disappointed, you know, if someone like Michelle wins the season. Cause I think I already know it's going to be someone like Michelle who wins, you know, and that's maybe, maybe that's for the best. I just kind of, I like the idea of these like titans coming together and battling it out. And then you're my favorite titan ends up winning. And it's just, no, I don't have any other predictions. I think this is going to be very much like most of the other returnee seasons, that it's going to have some really interesting, power moves, some really nice finesses going on, some really manipulative, good survivor, and then ultimately someone that we didn't really give much credit to is going to emerge as the new power threat.
Yeah. As long as they do a good job, like Sandra and Heroes versus Villains. I don't know if anybody was, you know, super pumped up of like, oh, here's versus Villains. Oh, what? Sandra is back? What? And then, you know, we make some new legends.
Yeah. I mean, I was super excited to see Sandra, and but players don't really I don't think the other players put that much emphasis.
She was underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
And look, nobody knows it better than me. Was out there with Amber. I was like, oh, Amber, really? What? I don't know. How'd she even get here?
No, for sure.
It's happening again?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be someone that it's just like... yeah, there's going to be someone that the people are not very high on that do not think that it's and it could be one of the guys too. That's like that.
How about this? Who's the better Survivor player at that point? Is it two-time winner Amber? Does she retake the title of best Survivor player at the Mariano household?
I think she'd have to. Wouldn't
think
she?
So. I mean, basically, yeah. I mean, she's goes to the finals twice and wins. Rob, that he ends up presuming that he doesn't get to go too far, has a win, but also, you know, a losing finalist appearance, and then also loses head to head against Amber. So, you know, maybe they need to knock down his giant head and put up Amber.
I'm all for that. Okay. I think the statues were ridiculous.
Yeah. All right. not my biggest complaint from season 39. Angie. If people want to give you any feedback, are you open to feedback?
I'm always open for feedback. People should know, though, when they're giving me feedback, I don't actually take myself that seriously. So if you're like, how could you possibly do, you know, I'm just going to be like, lol. So I will respond, but I'm not going to go on a diatribe about how you're incredibly wrong to be thinking these things.
Okay. All right. And that Twitter handle is @ Angie Cants, AngieCaunce.
That's right. Very easy, straightforward.
Anything else you want to mention? I know you're watching the Australian Survivor.
Mm-hmm. Very excited for Australian Survivor. Yes. A lot of my favorites are back.
Have you ever done the character types for the Australian Survivor?
I have not. The players are very different for the most part. I've had it kind of in the back of my head that there are some similarities. Mm-hmm. And once there are a few seasons in, I might be able to try it.
Okay.
But yeah, I haven't seen as many.
They cast the season on it like, oh, the snake. The
well, those the ones lovable, are easy.
Loyal person.
Yeah, like, those ones are easy. And then there's like a whole herd of like randomly average people right in the middle, and a lot of them don't even get like screen time.
Average people.
Yeah. So it'd be difficult.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what Australian Survivor is. It's like you know, Stars and Scrubs.
Mm-hmm. And I would want to completely reclassify them because I think the way that they would behave or, you know, like the good old boy, what the hell is that? There'd be the Outbacker or Crocodile Dundee or something like that. I don't know. But
yeah, I feel like Australian Survivor is a lot more of, you know, watch your favorite players dunk on a bunch of people that you don't care about.
No, for sure. For sure. But yeah, like the likable characters, the number of them are there's just so many. There's so many. It's amazing. Okay. I love it.
All right, Angie, great work. That I know that you take a lot of flack sometimes. The predictions don't come true, but you're always a good sport and we have a lot of fun doing it. So thank you so much for putting all this work into this.
Thank you for having me. Like, you know, it's like what Probe says, if you keep listening, I'll keep doing it.
All right. Well, great job. Thank you so much. We got a lot more coming up. The First Lady of Podcasting is going to make her predictions later on this week, plus much more coming up. We're going to also have our recap of the Wednesday night special. Be on the lookout for myself, Mike Bloom. Chelsea Walker will join us live after Wednesday night's 40 season special coming up on Wednesday. So be on the lookout for that and much more. Of course, you can always find out more about everything that we're doing on Rob Is a Podcast. Become a part of our Rob Is a Podcast patron community. What a time to be a patron of Rob Has a Podcast that I announced for this season. Angie, I'm going to do for one season only the Survivor pregame show at 7 o'clock Eastern, patrons only, to warm you up for Survivor Winners at War all season long. You've got access to the patron only podcast feed and much more, all at robhasawebsite.com/patron, as we are celebrating 10 years of Rob Has a Podcast this month. Can you believe it?
I cannot believe it. And yeah, go be a patron. It's an amazing community. I met my guy through the patron community. It's just, where in the world else are you going to find other freaks like us?
Yes, we cannot promise true love for everyone.
Oh, I can.
Yes, but you're also promising a final three with Parvati and Kim in it. So
I am.
You are. You cannot listen to me today.
Yeah. Yes. I'm taking credit for Kim playing this season, which is ridiculous.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.